Welcome to Reigning of the Bulls with Michael Marks. Today's guest is Mike Shade, Director of Toxic Free Future. In this Reigning of the Bulls episode, Mike will discuss the campaign challenge of removing harmful and deadly chemical-filled products sold by the Home Depot, Lowe's, and others. The challenge was shelf removal and demonstrating safer products could be sold instead. This groundbreaking campaign was titled Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families.
Mike Shade, welcome to the interview. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, could you tell us what your current organization and position is?
I direct the Mind the Store program for Toxic Free Future.
And what was the organization you were with at the time of the campaign we're going to talk about today and your role with them?
So it was the same campaign, the Mind the Store campaign. A few years ago, we integrated the Mind the Store campaign into a new organization, Toxic Free Future. But I've been directing this same campaign for over 10 years now. And this is a national campaign we launched to challenge the nation's largest retailers, companies like Walmart, Target, Amazon, Home Depot, to leverage their market power and influence to reduce and eliminate dangerous chemicals and plastics and move towards safer solutions.
Great. Before we launch into the campaign, just give us a brief overview of the organization and its mission, if there's anything in addition.
Yeah, so Toxic Free Future is a national environmental health advocacy organization. We've been around for over 40 years. We have offices around the country. We're headquartered in Seattle. And essentially, we work to protect the public, consumers, communities, workers from exposure to hazardous chemicals and plastics that are contributing to an epidemic of diseases that are on the rise, such as cancer. And we have a few key program areas. One, we conduct original scientific research to uncover and highlight hazards of chemicals and plastics around us. We work to advance policies at the state and the federal level to regulate and restrict dangerous chemicals and plastics and advance safer solutions. And through our Mind the Store program, we work to transform the policies and the practices of the business community, particularly retailers, to drive dangerous chemicals and plastics out of products and global supply chains.
Good. Well, with that, let's launch into the specific campaign. What was the specific issue that initiated the campaign?
So we launched Mind the Store over 10 years ago, as I mentioned, and when we launched Mind the Store, we were essentially saying to retailers, we'd like you to develop and implement corporate chemical policies to phase out and ban key chemicals of high concern. And over the years, we've focused our campaign on different chemicals, different plastics. We've done work on PFAS, flame retardants, phthalates, bisphenols, PVC plastic. This campaign that we're talking about today was a campaign that we launched to call on major home improvement chains like Lowe's and the Home Depot and others to phase out and ban the sale of products called paint strippers or paint removal products containing the chemicals methylene chloride and NMP. These are products that people use to remove paint from products. For example, they're often used to refinish bathtubs, for example, or to remove glue from wood flooring. But unfortunately, when consumers and workers use these products, they can actually be exposed to chemicals that not only are known to cause cancer and birth defects, but they actually can be deadly. Methylene chloride, which is the main chemical this campaign focused on, is a known human carcinogen. And it has killed dozens of consumers and workers in the United States in recent decades. When the EPA proposed action on this chemical, the two chemicals actually, we sprung into action.
Well, you alluded to the Home Depot, Lowe's. Were they the companies that you chose to focus on, or were there?
Yeah, so we decided to focus on these companies because, so the chemicals we're concerned about were found in paint removal products. And Home Depot and Lowe's were among the key retailers that the campaign focused on. And we focus on them because they're the biggest retailers of these products here in the United States, and certainly among the biggest retailers globally that sold these products. But the campaign was not only focused on those companies, but other major retailers as well, such as Amazon, Walmart, Sherwin-Williams, Menards. But originally, we initially focused on Lowe's and Home Depot because they're iconic retailers. They're publicly traded companies, so we knew that we could work with investors in the campaign. They were national in scope, so we can mobilize consumers and advocates around the country. These also are market leaders. They're the two largest home improvement chains in the United States. So we knew that if we could move them, that could really help set a precedent for other competing retailers across the country. These retailers sold products that had killed, in the case of Lowe's, one of their customers in the months leading up to the launch of the public-facing campaign. While we were focused on both Home Depot and Lowe's, the campaign really leaned into Lowe's because we were contacted by a family whose son purchased a product at Lowe's and was killed using it when he was stripping the floor of his small business.
Wow.
A man by the name of Drew Wynn, and I can get into those details in a minute. But we really, wanted to focus on retailers because we knew that they could play a critical role in driving these toxic and deadly products off the market. I should mention, a key reason why we launched this campaign is because in 2016, we were successful in passing national legislation that was signed into law by President Obama that reformed federal law called the Toxic Substances Control Act. That's the primary law that is focused on regulating hazardous chemicals such as these. In the final days of the Obama administration, months after this law was signed, the Obama EPA announced that they were proposing to ban these two chemicals, methylene chloride and NMP. The Trump administration came into town days later. And so, we knew that Trump was coming in with an anti-regulatory agenda, and we knew if we were going to get the EPA to ban these chemicals, we really needed to mount a corporate campaign to begin to drive these chemicals off the market. And we knew that if we can get retailers to take action, that would help create political momentum for the federal EPA to ban these chemicals as well. So there was a real intentional strategic interplay between the corporate campaign we were running and our federal policy campaign as well.
So that's actually a really interesting lesson and timely, given that Trump is now coming back into
Yes.
office
Here
and
we
looking
are
at.
4 years later in a similar situation. Yes.
And it also underscores just how important corporate campaigns can be when regulatory agencies are weakened or are and legislation is proposed to be rolled back.
Absolutely. When we have administrations that maybe, don't want to do the right thing, don't want to protect consumers, the public, the environment, corporate campaigns can be incredibly effective in driving change, not only at the national level, but internationally as well, because major businesses like Home Depot and Lowe's and Amazon and Walmart, we can impact their policy not only at a national level in many cases, but also internationally as well.
Before you started the campaign, was there a report documenting the harm associated with these particular chemicals that you were able to show to Lowe's or Home Depot or?
Yeah. Well, so when EPA proposed banning these chemicals, EPA published a detailed assessment of the hazards that these chemicals pose to consumers and workers. So there was a lot of information within the EPA docket that we can point to. Additionally, there had been investigative journalism reports out there documenting the hazards that these chemicals pose to consumers and workers. So I believe it was the Center for Public Integrity that had done some really important reporting on this. So we pulled that information together and we sent letters to the CEOs of the Home Depot and Lowe's summarizing why we were concerned about this. Additionally, we developed fact sheets summarizing the hazards these chemicals pose. We also pulled together information about the availability of safer alternatives. In fact, retailers like Home Depot and Lowe's not only were selling the bad actor products that we were working to press them to phase out and ban, but they were already selling the safer alternatives as well. So we pulled together that information. Additionally, over time, we created a map that highlighted the cities and the states around the country where consumers or workers were killed from using these products. So we pulled together a lot of information to tell the story of how these products could harm consumers and workers, but also the availability of safer, cost-effective alternatives that retailers could immediately start selling and stocking their store shelves with.
When you sent the letter and provided this information to Lowe's, the Home Depot, did that result in any meetings with them or contact
Yeah,
with them?
yeah. And I should mention that, we had been engaging both retailers for a number of years at that point. In fact, we had been successful in getting both Home Depot and Lowe's, as well as other retailers, to ban other chemicals in building products. Back in 2015, for example, we got Home Depot and Lowe's to phase out and ban the sale of vinyl flooring containing phthalates. So we had already developed relationships with sustainability leaders at both companies, and that was one of the other reasons why we decided to target these companies, because we knew that they were movable. We had a track record of success. We had relationships that we had built with the companies. So, to answer your question, yes. So, about a month after EPA proposed banning these chemicals, we sent letters to the CEOs of both companies and we started engaging them. At first, Home Depot was not very responsive to us, but Lowe's was. And we had a series of meetings with both companies. Over the course of a year. But over time, it was really clear to us that we were really just banging our heads against the wall. No matter how much information we provided to both companies about the dangers of the chemicals, the business risks that they face for continuing to sell them, the availability of alternatives, we threw at them a lot of information. But despite that, they were not willing to budge. And it became clear that we really needed to launch a more public-facing campaign to take the campaign to the next level. I will say that when after we first sent a letter to Home Depot, they were not immediately responsive. We then launched an online petition targeting them. That immediately got their attention, and that opened the doors to dialogue and negotiation. But despite that, they were not willing to adopt a meaningful policy. And eventually, we decided to pivot the public campaign to Lowe's, which I can talk about in a minute. I should mention one of the things that was really important before I get to that is when we sent a letter to Home Depot and Lowe's that winter, we included a list of products that both retailers sold. And that contained these chemicals, methylene chloride, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But there was a really that's really important to this story because it connects with the consumer who died purchasing the product from Lowe's.
Before we launch into the campaign specifically,
Yeah,
did you have ally organizations in the campaign?
absolutely. So we, in the early days of the campaign and through the campaign, we worked with other national organizations, state-based partners. So, for example, one of our key partners in the campaign was NRDC, who we worked closely with. We also worked with many other national and state-based environmental and public health advocacy organizations. For example, the National KOSH Network, who is a network of organizations concerned about worker health and safety. We developed partnerships with online organizations such as change.org. We worked with health-affected organizations such as the Learning Disabilities Association of America. And then we also worked with investors that were members of the Investor Environmental Health Network because we were engaging and working to move publicly traded companies. So there was it was important for us to also engage investors in the campaign. So yeah, we worked with a large network of organizations through the course of this campaign, not only after we sent the letter to the company, but also after we launched it. I should also mention that we also worked with academic experts who had been studying these chemicals for decades who could really speak to the hazards that these chemicals pose to workers and to consumers. And then we also worked with academic researchers who were researching and actually developing new alternatives to these products that they were trying to bring to market. So there was kind of an ecosystem of different stakeholders that we had developed partnerships with as we built the campaign over time.
Good. So it really was multi-tracked kind of campaign.
Yes. So yeah, there was, you know, it was certainly a multifaceted campaign that included inside engagement, outside engagement, public advocacy, shareholder activism, online campaigning, in-person campaigning, federal policy work, state policy work. So it was a really interesting and one of the more exciting campaigns that I've been ever a part of and was really honored to coordinate and something that I'm really proud of because we eventually won, which we'll talk about eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, you should be. It's one of the reasons I chose you and this campaign to interview because I consider it to, in the last 20 years to be really one of the seminal campaigns.
Oh, thank you.
No question in my mind, just given the diversity of it, the strategy and tactics that were employed. It was.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Example.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. The campaign itself. How did you launch it? What were the demands? And then just how did it unfold?
We sent letters to the CEOs of Home Depot and Lowe's. We started meeting with them. We provided all this information to them. But we weren't getting anywhere in that, you know, they were engaging their suppliers weren't willing to budge, and they weren't willing to essentially put their foot down and say, hey, we're not going to sell these products anymore. Fast forward about 8 months after we had sent the letters and we had been meeting with the companies, we were contacted by this family, parents and the brothers of this young man named Drew Nguyen. And sadly, he had purchased a paint removal product from Lowe's. And coincidentally, it was one of the very same products that we had flagged for Lowe's when we sent them a letter. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, we included a fact sheet that provided examples of products that they sold that could kill their customers. So 8 months after we had sent Lowe's this letter, this young man bought one of the very same identical products. Sadly, he was killed using this product. He was refinishing the floor of his business. He owned a small coffee roasting business and found the next day after using this product. So we were contacted by this family because they had seen our website because we had published, we had published like some blogs about campaign before we escalated further. And they had read about it and they said, hey, you know, we've been directly affected. We've been through this awful situation and we want to ensure that no other family experiences what we have gone through.
Mm.
And we had already been thinking that, you know, we really need to escalate public pressure on these companies. And fast forward a couple of months, roughly about a year after we had sent letters to the CEOs of the Home Depot and Lowe's, we kicked off the campaign with a national press conference with this family, the parents mm-hmm. of Drew Nguyen. We held a national press teleconference with the family where they told their story about how their son had been killed with this product that was purchased at Lowe's. Additionally, we launched a national online petition on change.org in collaboration with the family. And it was a petition that we launched jointly with this family in their name and our name as well, where they essentially made the point that no other family should have to suffer. DIY shouldn't spell danger. And that we and they wanted retailers like Lowe's to phase out and ban the sale of paint removal products that contained both methylene chloride and the regrettable substitute NMP. That's the other chemical that EPA proposed banning. And it was really off to the races from there. You know, working with that family was really essential to the campaign from the beginning to the end, because it was really powerful to have a family that had been directly affected advocating and organizing and agitating for change, really having people that were directly affected being spokespeople for the campaign and really leveraging their anger and their trauma and their devastating story and trying to essentially ensure that no other family had to go through what they had gone through. And that was really, I think, transformative in the campaign, having a family that people that have been directly impacted. It's a whole other ball of wax when you have people, a mom and a dad whose, young son in his 20s who was killed unnecessarily from a product that he bought at Lowe's.
Did you record their statements or anything that allowed you to then use, circulate them on Facebook, for example, or LinkedIn, or on digital media, or
Oh yeah.
how did you get the word out and their story out?
We worked with them on a collaborative online petition on change.org, which over the course of the campaign generated tens of thousands of petition signatures. We put together social media graphics. I can't remember if we put together a video where we interviewed them or not. We certainly had videos on the campaign that featured the story of Drew Wynn. He had two brothers that we worked closely with on the campaign, but certainly we were working with them to share their story. We would put journalists in touch with family members so that they could share their story. We worked with the family on at least one op-ed that was published. And one of the things that was really interesting is once we launched the campaign publicly with them, we also started identifying and working with other families who also had been impacted. We connected with another family. There was another young man who bought a paint removal product from another retailer. But interestingly, this family heard about the campaign and they signed our petition to Lowe's. And we noticed in their comment on the petition, they actually said, "Hey, I'm a mom and my son was also just killed." Like it had only been like weeks or maybe even a month. And once we saw that, we reached out to this woman and we started developing a relationship with her, as well as a couple of other moms who had been affected. So we worked with a network of parents, particularly moms whose children had been impacted. And that was really another kind of powerful element of the campaign because it wasn't just one family that had been impacted, but there were multiple families who had been personally impacted and devastated. And they were really advocating for change, not only to get retailers like Lowe's and Home Depot to act, but also putting pressure on EPA to ban this chemical. Because I should note that once the Trump administration came into office, they essentially were dragging their feet. They weren't really doing anything to move the proposed ban on methylene chloride and NMP forward. And again, our campaign was designed not only to push retailers to take action, but also to put public pressure on the EPA to take action, and also states like California to ban these chemicals as well.
Sometimes in these campaigns, there's also kind of field tactics, demonstrations or rallies or anything. Were there any of that either in front of Lowe's or Home Depot?
Well, we did a few different things. We did, a call-in day to Lowe's. We had tactics where we encourage supporters to share content on social media, tagging the company on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. A key moment that we were really building momentum towards was the company's annual shareholder meeting. So we launched the campaign publicly. I believe it was late February. I believe it was February of that year. And the shareholder meeting was quickly approaching that May or June. So, about a month before the annual shareholder meeting, month and a half or 2 months after we launched the campaign, roughly, we held the National Week of Action, where advocates, grassroots activists in states around the country held leafleting actions, informational pickets, press conferences, media events in front of Lowe's stores across the country. And that really kind of took the campaign to another level because at that point we had generated media attention. We had generated tens of thousands of petitions. And this really kind of escalated the campaign because now, Lowe's was seeing us visiting their stores and talking to their customers and talking to the workers at the stores and leafleting their employees and leafleting their customers. And they really saw that, hey, this campaign is not going away, especially as we were approaching the company's annual shareholder meeting. And certainly that was not accidental. And at the same time, investors that we had reached out to also started reaching out to Lowe's and had been meeting with them. So we had an inside-outside approach where we and investors were engaging the companies behind the scenes. And at the same time, we were escalating public pressure on the company to do the right thing. And as we were doing that, we were also continuing to, I would say, play nice with sustainability leaders at both Lowe's and Home Depot, because we had developed relationships with the sustainability leaders over time. And we didn't want to alienate them, and we didn't want to shut down the lines of communication. So not all the time, but a number of times when we were planning to escalate with like a petition or the week of action, we intentionally gave the sustainability leaders at the company a heads up that this was coming so that they could be prepared, and so that we were really essentially arming them with information so that they could be change makers inside the company. And so also their bosses could see that they also knew what was going on and that they weren't just being caught flat-footed on this issue. And so we were really trying to essentially help them make the case internally within the company that, hey, this campaign is escalating, and I heard that this is going to be happening or that is going to be happening. We really need to take this seriously. And that, I think, was really important, and something that I think was critical in making change. So we weren't just like bashing the company over the head, but we were really trying to still work with the company behind the scenes and be reasonable with our demands and asks, while we were still escalating public-facing pressure on the company.
So it sounds like there was a real convergence. There was the day of action across the country, a lot of people showing up. There's the petitions, there's the shareholder meeting coming up, and also there's the empowering of internal champions in the form of the sustainability directors to really move things along. Now, did that result in any meeting with the company executives to kind of do a final negotiation?
So we had a series of meetings with both Lowe's and Home Depot over, the course of, gosh, about a year and a half. And when we launched the campaign more publicly that February or March, yeah, we had a number of different meetings, largely by phone or Zoom, but it was all leading up to the annual shareholder meeting. And we decided that, we were going to continue to escalate. And the shareholder meeting, we decided, was going to be a real critical moment where we kind of took the campaign to corporate executives. So we were planning to attend the annual shareholder meeting. In fact, we rented a hotel room, a conference room at the same hotel where Lowe's was having their annual shareholder meeting. And we were planning to hold a press conference inside the hotel the morning of the shareholder meeting. Investors that held stock at the company lent us their proxy so that myself and a couple of other advocates could attend the meeting. And one of the people that we were going to get inside the Lowe's meeting was one of the moms whose son had died. And she was planning to speak at the meeting, and she was actually prepared to deliver the tens of thousands of petitions that we had mobilized in the campaign. And we gave Lowe's a heads up that we were planning to do this. About a week before the shareholder meeting was going to take place, and we had given them a heads up that we were going to be there, we were going to have the mom deliver the petitions. About a week before the shareholder meeting, we got a call from Lowe's, from their sustainability director, and they're like, hey, you guys did it. We're ready to cut a deal. We're ready to announce a commitment to phase out and ban the sale of these products. We're ready to do it by the end of this year. And you're not going to need to come to our shareholder meeting. In fact, we're going to announce this in a couple of days. We're going to issue a press release, and we want to work with you on announcing this and making this commitment publicly. So we won the campaign with Lowe's, and the company, I think it was like 2 days. This was on So the shareholder meeting, the days are a little bit fuzzy, but they had called us on like a Thursday or Friday. The shareholder meeting was like the following Thursday, I believe. And the company announced their public commitment that Tuesday or Wednesday, like a day or two before the shareholder meeting. So we won the Lowe's campaign. They committed to phasing out and banning the sale of these products by the end of that calendar year, which we felt pretty good about it because that was within, that was like, I think May or June. So that was within about a 6 or 7 month time period. And then from there, we immediately started looking at pivoting to other competing retailers.
That was my next question. Because usually inside a particular industry, when you get that victory, particularly when it's with one of the leading companies and it has a ripple effect. How did you pivot?
Well, that was the thing that was really exciting about it because once we moved Lowe's, we knew that we were going to be able to likely win similar commitments from other retailers. We've done this before, right? Once we got Home Depot to ban vinyl flooring with phthalates, we got Lowe's to make the same commitment within a week, a few years prior. So we immediately pivoted to the Home Depot as our next corporate target. You know, we immediately started engaging Home Depot and letting them know, hey, you're next. We're prepared to pivot to you as our next corporate target. You know, and it wasn't just us, it was other partners across the country, NRDC, other national organizations, state-based organizations, investors. And in engaging Home Depot, one of the things we learned immediately after Lowe's had made their commitment was Home Depot was concerned that their customers, especially their professional contractors, would stop shopping at Home Depot and go to Sherwin-Williams instead. And they weren't, interestingly, they weren't concerned about the paint removal products as much, but they were worried about their paint sales writ large, which is a huge source of income for Home Depot. And they're concerned about losing their professional contractor customers. So when we learned that they were almost less worried about Lowe's and they were more worried at this point with Sherwin-Williams, we immediately pivoted to Sherwin-Williams at the same time. So we kind of do the multi-pronged approach. The day we sent a letter to Sherwin-Williams, they announced that they would phase out and ban the sale of paint removal products containing methylene chloride and NMP the day we sent them the letter. We immediately told Home Depot, and they were like, yep, we're done. And literally a couple of days after Sherwin-Williams announced their commitment, Home Depot made the same commitment as well. So within less than a month after Lowe's made their commitment, both Sherwin-Williams and the Home Depot made the same commitment as well. And then we started engaging other major retailers. About a month after that, Walmart announced the same commitment. And then eventually other major chains like Menards, Amazon, Ace Hardware, roughly a dozen major US retailers announced that they would phase out and ban the sale of these products within less than a year's time. So, and it was really after we moved Lowe's that really created a domino effect in the retail sector. And the biggest retailers in the US agreed to phase out and ban the sale of these products, not only in the US, but globally as well. So the campaign had not only a national impact, but a global impact as well.
Yes, that was huge.
So,
So it started out with the Trump administration coming in, concerns about the EPA not enforcing. Oftentimes, when you get the victory, there's a tendency now to go look for ways to institutionalize the victory. So did you go back to the EPA? Now that a lot of at least the corporate opposition was neutralized.
absolutely, yeah. And eventually, we were successful in getting EPA to ban methylene chloride. So EPA eventually announced a ban on all consumer uses of methylene chloride. That wasn't enough for us. So we and other groups eventually sued the EPA to essentially say, hey, you need to not only ban this for consumer uses, but for industrial and commercial uses as well. Eventually, actually, just this past year, in April 2024, EPA finally announced a comprehensive ban on all consumer uses of methylene chloride and most commercial and industrial uses. And this corporate campaign we ran played a critical role in creating the essentially political pressure on the administration, both the Trump administration, but also the Biden administration. The Trump administration announced a partial ban on methylene chloride just for retailers, but this was after we had already gotten all the major retailers, all the national retailers, to take action. So it was a partial victory. And then in more recent years, the Biden EPA finalized a more comprehensive ban on methylene chloride, not only in paint removal products, but dozens of other type of consumer products, commercial and industrial products. So they went even further than the retailers did. So it was a huge win for us.
When you look back on the campaign, what are some of the things that you think were absolutely critical? And you've already alluded to several of them. But
Yeah.
what were some of the things that you go, in retrospect, we would have done this differently?
A few different things. I think, one, the inside outside approach was critical. Trying to engage the companies behind the scenes, giving them an opportunity to do the right thing as a way to build trust in the relationship. That's always a type of campaign that I prefer to run, to give a company the right thing to do, so that we could seem reasonable, not only with the companies, but also with the media, investors, and other stakeholders. Working with people that have been directly impacted by the issue and working with them to share their stories and to have them advocate for change is really important. Working with real people, having, as I noted, inside outside approach. So while we're engaging the companies behind the scenes, mobilizing public pressure, focusing on companies that are really market leaders, and focusing on the market leaders so that once we can move them, that can help create a domino and tipping effect in the sector. Working with investors and, leading up to the annual shareholder meeting, some of the tactics that we deployed, including the online petitioning, social media graphics, the week of action, all these types of tactics really helped create what I would describe as a public perfect storm of activity that created political crisis for the retailers and essentially forced their hand to act. Because they knew, they knew that they needed to do this and they knew it was the right thing to do. Honestly, they were getting pushback from their suppliers. This one company, the biggest manufacturer in the space, was a company named WM Bar. They didn't want to do this. And so we needed to create essentially a political crisis for the companies where they had to do the right thing. And they knew that this was a problem. Like, there was no question that this was a deadly and dangerous product. They could see that. There was no question that it was a known carcinogen. There was no question that it was killing consumers and workers, particularly disproportionately affecting workers of color, because a lot of professional contractors that use these products are Latino folks. And we worked with EJ organizations and organizations that represent Latino workers during the course of the campaign. So all these things were really essential. But on the flip side, the thing that we didn't do enough of that I regret is really putting greater emphasis on the need for them to not only to ban the chemicals, but also to ensure that the substitutes are truly safe. We shared with them a lot of information about safer, cost-effective alternatives, but the thing that we didn't do enough of in the campaign that I regret, quite honestly, is we didn't put enough emphasis on the need. As you know, when we were negotiating the deal with them, that they would phase out and ban the sale of these products for most retailers within less than a year, that they needed to ensure that the substitutes were also verifiably safer. Because unfortunately, in some cases, some of their suppliers started introducing alternatives that contained other bad actor chemicals. I think you can make an argument that those alternatives were safer compared to methylene chloride. They wouldn't kill their customers, but some of the ingredients in the alternatives are what we would describe as what we call a regrettable substitute. So that's one of the things that is something that was a real lesson and has informed our public advocacy going forward. So now when we are campaigning around other chemicals of high concern, like PFAS, for example, which we've done a lot of work on in recent years, with our retail report card, which is a tool we put out to benchmark retail progress on dangerous chemicals and plastics, we've put much greater emphasis on the need for companies to not only what we call ban the bad, but to ensure that the substitutes are truly safe, not only for consumers, but for communities and workers across the life cycle of chemicals and plastics. So that's really, I think, my only regret. And that is a hard lesson to swallow, but it has really, I think, enabled us to become more effective advocates for change. And that has really, I think, the campaign that we lead today, our policy work at the state, the federal level, the corporate campaigning we're running, we're really putting much greater emphasis today on the need for companies to verify the safety of alternatives. So that is really the biggest lesson that we learned with that campaign. And it, was transformative in that regard because it was a real wake-up call in many ways.
Which you've actually prefaced my what was my last question of, how has this really affected the evolution of the organization and its strategy?
That's really it, honestly. 2016 was the first year that we put out our first ever retail report card. We just published the sixth iteration of the retail report card in last month, fall of 2024. The most recent iteration of the report card puts much greater emphasis on safer solutions and safer alternatives. In fact, we've doubled the number of possible points that companies can receive around safer solutions because we're never going to solve these problems if companies move from one bad actor, chemical or plastic, to another. And that's why we're really pushing for more comprehensive systemic change in the government policy that we're advocating for and also corporate policies that we're advocating for within the business community. And that's, I think, one of the lessons that we've learned with this campaign. And I think something that other corporate campaigners and marketplace transformation advocates really need to focus on in our advocacy. We need to ensure that the solutions systematically address the problems that we're working to solve. For example, if you're working on climate, well, it's not so great to go from, coal to nuclear, right? You're just creating a different type of problem. So that's why we need to be advancing solutions that are protective across the life cycle of issues that we're working on, whether it's toxics or climate or water or workers' rights, you name it.
I think that's the perfect place to wrap the story. Mike Shea, Toxic Free Future, Methylene Chloride Campaign. Thank you so much for telling us the story.
Thank you so much. And I should say that I've learned a lot from you over the years. I mean, I attended Business Ethics Network trainings in the past, and a lot of that information I gleaned from those trainings, really informed this campaign. So thank you for sharing your work over the years, because it's been transformative for me as an advocate over the years. One of the first protests I ever organized was in the late 90s in college outside of a Home Depot, targeting Home Depot on old growth lumber. So the work that you've done over the years has been hugely inspirational and educational for me. So thank you for all of your work.
Thanks. And thank you. That's very nice. And also, now it's your turn to pass it on to the next generation.
Yes.
So, Mike,
Yes,
again,
absolutely.
thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. And if folks want to learn more, they can visit our website at toxicfreefuture.org and retailerreportcard.com.
Okay, perfect. We'll end it there.
Thank you for listening to Reining in the Bulls with Michael Marks. To learn more about Toxic Free Future and their market transformation programs, please visit them at toxicfreefuture.org. You can also learn more about other groundbreaking campaigns at reininginthebulls.org. Thank you for listening to the Reining in the Bulls podcast. Unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited and may not be used without express written permission. CEI, Corporate Ethics International, and Reining in the Bulls. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved.